All right, it's at this time of the morning that we get the latest news from our two news folk. One of them is Business Day and Daily Maverick columnist Ishmael Khadi, and the other is Katie McDonald in Sydney. We're going to start with Ishmael. Good morning to you, good sir.
Good morning to you. How are you?
I'm all right, not bad. Have you seen Squid Game?
No, I haven't, and no. I don't intend it.
No, don't do it. Either. Don't do it. Very, very strange. All right, let's crack on. Elections, and we're focusing on the leadership. Tell me, go. What's happening?
It's ridiculous that, you know, the leaders are the standout. Oh, I almost said a bad word. Unpleasant people.
Yeah.
And Malema, for instance, is saying that those people who steal electricity should not be arrested because they're actually heroes. So, you know, this is all populist rhetoric just to get the vote.
Yeah.
People want, you know, you wonder who's going to pay for all this in the end. And then the interesting thing, actually, I'm not personally impressed, personally surprised. The people don't like the ANC much, but they love Ramaphosa. This is very interesting. It's
Do we still love Ramaphosa?
I think we do. I think we do. I mean, as an analyst, you know, if I analyze things, you know, it's what I get paid to do is, I find, you know, people, you know, you don't want to sound sycophantic, but if you say today I'm going to stamp out corruption, it doesn't mean corruption is going to end 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
And, you know, he said he's going to stamp out corruption, and people expect him to then go to the local police office and say, go and arrest Zweli Mkhize. A president should not be allowed powers like that. That's authoritarianism.
Yeah.
So what people have been telling him is arrest Mkhize to show us that
you're metal.
You know, that you're serious.
Yeah.
But the point is, a president should not have those powers. It's not his job and it's not his powers. Only dictators and authoritarian leaders arrest people and put the people in prison. But, you know, this does not absolve him from, you know, the buck stops with him.
Yeah.
If the, you know, the wheels of justice turn slowly, then it gets to him. But so having said all that, people still love Ramaphosa more than they do the ANC.
Mm.
It also, you know, I have to tell you that every week a bad apple shows up, and it really actually breaks my heart. Not that I'm an ANC member or even a supporter, but the point is, you know, for so long, I really admired Zweli Mkhize. He did such a good job. And then this vibes thing blows up, and you sink and you go, oh no, not another one.
Yeah.
You know, so every time, so this is becoming quite tedious. And then the DA is, you know, tying itself in a knot, with these posters in KZN. I don't know if you remember, and I'm sure our listeners know about it, where the DA put up posters in Phoenix.
I just wonder. Things happen often in this country and with politics and parties. And you sit back and you say, how did that happen? At what point? Because you're talking about the buck stopping somewhere. There's got to be a process. A process has to happen where they're all sitting around at the table and they go, right, election time, got to get some posters out. Chaps, what are we going to have? And some idiot sticks up his hand and goes, I've got a brilliant idea for Phoenix. And they all go, yeah, brilliant. Well done. Well done. And then it happens. And the rest of, you know, right-thinking, normal people go, so, Mo, what are you doing? Who allowed for this to happen? It's just extraordinary to me to be 3 weeks off from an election and having to frantically backpedal because you've put out posters that are just not only objectionable but stupid. Just bizarre. How? Yeah. How does this happen? And I can't ask John Steenhuisen because he's blocked me on Twitter. So, I mean, otherwise I would have directed my question to him. But I'm persona non grata as far as Steenhuisen's concerned.
Well, yeah, the only people who blocked
it's
me at
badge
the
of
EFF,
honor.
But that's, I don't particularly care. You make a very good point there, is where does the buck stop with those things? And as it turns out, Steenhuisen is quite, I'm going to use the word tough, even though there's a disparaging term that I wanted to use.
Yeah.
He's very tough. And, okay, let me use it a better phrase. He seems to be very authoritarian.
Yeah.
And populist and couldn't give a damn type politician. He'll say what he wants to say and do what he wants to do. So he's following quite closely in Helen Zille. Now, yeah. As we said on this segment before, is very many people, more of us, more people in this country will vote for the DA, well, are liberal in some sense of the word, but don't like the DA. And this is the thing they don't understand. They don't seem to understand that there are very many people who love and appreciate and respect the achievements of liberalism, like freedom of speech, freedom of association.
Yes.
Very many of these things have their moorings in traditional liberal thought.
Yeah.
But as soon as you're associated with sort of excessive individualism, consumer capitalism, then it becomes really bad. Then it becomes a danger to society. Mm. Then it becomes toxic. So they always seem to tap into the worst parts of liberalism. And, so you make it's an excellent point. If somebody comes up with a wise idea, and because they lack the thinking capacity of broad thinking, and it's not unique to the, let's be fair, it's the DA is actually very good when compared with, say, the EFF. But this was not, this was worse than a faux pas. It was really bad.
Yeah, way off. Listen, we're going to have to move on. COVID, the numbers are, whenever I come on air, the bulletin before me tends to be leading with a COVID-related story. Yesterday, I think the numbers were about 900 and something. Today, I think around 816. I mean, good, yeah, great news that we're on a downward trajectory. We went out yesterday afternoon and we're in Colk Bay and people sort of, we're seeing more people this morning. As I drove in, of course, the cycle tour is happening. It's great. We're still not getting vaccinated enough, and we are still headed for a fourth wave, according to the experts.
Well, I wrote at some point, I wrote it, that this is a battle that I've given up. I've given up on. I'm one of the very few people who thought that we should postpone the election for at least 6 months.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, COVID's not going anywhere. The election is not going anywhere. We're in the middle of a crisis. And if you put politicians on the road, if you put people at the polls, they're going to spread things. Religious meetings, political meetings. We should really just put a stop to that. So these are the problem. This is the problem we face. We're all rushing across the world. I actually read some news this morning from the Southeast Asian country, who is vaccinated 86% of adults. And as soon as they reach 90, they'll stop because then it'll become endemic. And then they'll say, okay, everybody can go out now. We're not there yet. That's the truth. Because when it becomes endemic, then we all just have to accept it. And that's why gloves and sanitization is here to stay.
Yeah, looks like it. All right. Your last story for us is that this new malaria vaccine, but we as a country are not a top priority.
Well, we're not a top priority in a sense that there's a very small sliver of a country, of the country, where it's prevalent. It's near the Kruger National Park and Mpumalanga. And so if you think that in 2019 there were 229 million cases in the world, so South Africa had fewer than, had between 10,000 and 20,000 people cases. You know, I mean, it's minuscule. So when we say it's not a priority, the priority countries are Nigeria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Tanzania, Burkina Faso, Mozambique, and Niger. Now, the point is, the high number is Nigeria, 23%, accounts for 23% of cases and deaths. The Congo, 11%, and then it drops to 5 and 4%. So by the time there's sort of a pattern. It's really high up north, and as you get to the south, it dissipates. In that sense, we're fairly safe. So when it says we're not a priority country, it doesn't mean we're going to be ignored. It's just that you have to treat, you know, you have to start vaccination where it's more needed and more important. Mm. And this is more or less what's happening.
Mm. Mm. All right. Listen, we've run out of time, Mr. Lakhadian, I'm afraid, but we always appreciate your insights. I just checked that I am still blocked by John Steenhuisen, and I am, which is obviously devastating. Thanks very much indeed to Ishmael Lakhadian, who joins us every Sunday morning for a roundup of news making headlines in this neck of the woods. We're going to go down under now to Katie McDonald. Good morning to you, madam. Hello.
Good morning to you, Sarah Jane.
All right, let's crack on. Let's start. Maria Ressa, I don't know that name. Who is she and why she's in the news? Why is she in the news?
This is excellent. This is big news and I think, yeah, fairly, well, important when you look at journalism worldwide. So Maria Ressa is a journalist from the Philippines. In 2012, she co-founded a site called Rattler. It's an independent news site in the Philippines. It's come under harsh criticism from the government. Duterte, she's actually currently out on bail because she's appealing a decision in a libel case against her. Anyway, she and a Russian journalist, Dmitry Muratov, have both won the Nobel Peace Prize for 2021. Yeah. It's a big thing. It's the first time since 1935 that the Peace Prize has been given or awarded to journalists. And it's something that the committee... Well, they'd be pretty, I'd say, obvious in noting the importance of safeguarding freedom of expression, you know, which we know is a cornerstone or it's a precondition for democracy.
Yeah.
And it's news sites such as Rappler, these independent news sites that are essentially the thorn in the side of governments, Duterte's government in the Philippines, that are so brave, they're so courageous, they will criticize at their own peril, to their own cost, and that is what she has done. And it's wonderful, wonderful news. It might not save them because the government is pretty intent on, pulling this thorn out of their side, so to speak. And she is overjoyed and incredibly honoured. There's been no comment from the government with regards to the prize, as you could well imagine. But it's a big thing, and I think it also speaks to so many journalists, Sarah Jane, as you would so well be aware, around the world, in many countries that do incredible jobs, and they are, I'm not exaggerating, they're risking life.
They definitely are.
Their own freedoms.
Yeah.
So it's a big thing and a wonderful thing, and she's the first Philippine to win the Nobel Prize on her own as well. It's a huge honour.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
She said,
this is an award for all journalists around the world. Power to you, madam. Well done. Fantastic stuff. All right. New South Wales, that your neck of the woods, set to open up tomorrow after more than 100 days in lockdown. What's the sentiment over there at this point?
Dare I say, woohoo!
Woohoo is the sentiment. All right.
Great excitement. So, it's our Freedom Day. So, you know, all those things, hairdressers, pubs, restaurants are all opening, obviously with certain rules. You know, you have to QR code to get into any place. We've got an app that hasn't gone on. Yes.
I'm so fascinated. I'm so fascinated, Katie. Every time over the last sort of 18 months when we've spoken to you, I've been so interested by the comparative ways in which Australia and not just Australia, but your part of the world has been dealing with COVID compared to, let's say, South Africa. And then we cross, of course, later in the show to Gavin in the UK. And it's just extraordinary the different measures and the way different countries deal and different jurisdictions, different territories have dealt with this pandemic. And it is absolutely fascinating to me because your numbers, when we compare numbers, they're nothing. They pale into insignificant. Well, they're not insignificant, of course, because it's people's lives. But comparatively, they are so fewer than we have experienced and still continue to experience. And yet here we are at level one and, you know, taking a walk around a part of Cape Town yesterday, and you would imagine if it weren't for the masks, you would sort of forget that we were in a pandemic. And then we cross to you 100 days into a lockdown. What are your numbers at the moment?
Well, the New South Wales numbers are going down. We have 477 today, which is our lowest figure since August.
Right.
Victoria upwards. Slightly yesterday, I mean less today than yesterday, 1,890. So they're still on that upwards trajectory. But, you know, they're going now by the vaccination numbers. So in New South Wales, over 90%, 90.1% of people have had their first dose and 72.8% are fully vaccinated. So that's pretty good. Victoria lagging behind a bit, but they're expecting that in Victoria they will see 80% by November because their premier has announced that the Melbourne Cup, and that is the race that stops the nation, and we've got to be on to our sporting events, will at the moment be going ahead with 10,000 people allowed to attend. That's November the 2nd. So it's each state is approaching it differently, as I continue to say to you. Daniel Andrews came out and said, look, we are going to have to learn how to live with it. We have a new premier in place. He's very much more, yes, opening up, great, and we will learn how to live with it. There's concern that there's going to be increased strain on hospitals and health services because numbers will go up. We're going to see that. But at the current rate of vaccinations, it's looking pretty good. It really is. So, look, it's going to be a whole new world, Sarah Jane. We do have all these apps. So, you know, I have my vaccine on my phone. There's going to be a new vaccine passport app. As I said, you've got a QR into every venue. Wow. There's still be limitations on numbers and such. So it's a bit of a technical thing. I mean, keep forgetting to check out. I think I still could be in the supermarket that I went to yesterday. I'll need to check that. But, they're trying and we've got to see how it works. And the brilliant thing is the excitement levels. Look, personally, I can't get a haircut because you can't get in anywhere.
Okay.
But I'm going to a restaurant on Tuesday night and I'm hugely excited.
I would be too. I'm glad for you. I'm glad that things are opening up because it's... in addition, obviously, to the commerce side of things, from a psychological point of view, I mean... Yeah, it's challenging, and I think that's an understatement. A few months ago, Katie McDonald, you were telling us about various birds that were, which made me laugh because there's some very funny names of birds. What's the latest bird news you've got for us? I gather that it's one of the most, as you say, hotly contested votes, probably globally, I'd say. It's the 2021 Australian Bird of the Year. And it's not Kylie Minogue.
It's a biggie. No, it's not. It's not. Although we will be able to sight her in Australia very soon.
Yes, indeed.
She's coming home.
Very good. She is. She's coming home. Yeah.
Get excited. Well, we know what bird fundies and watchers are like. They're absolutely passionate. And I was hoping that it was going to be...
Twitchers.
I go to the kookaburra.
Is that what they're called? Twitchers.
Twitchers. That's it. Yeah. That's it. I like a bird with a funny name. I like the Gang Gang Cockatoo. You know... A bird with a bit of personality, but no, all of these ones have been, because it's a bird, you know, kind of two wings and they fly, yeah.
Two wings and a beak.
I'm probably, I'm going to get terribly, terribly lambasted for that.
Yeah, the Twitchers won't be happy.
So what, please censor things. But the fact is that out of all these birds, the little bird that, and when I say little, it is a little bird that has emerged triumphant, that has won Bird of the Year 2021, is the fairy wren. It's the superb fairy wren. It's a tiny little bird. You actually see it in the cities, and they are very pretty. It's got blue plumage that sparkles and such, but they're so small, you need good eyesight to see that. But they do hang around the cities. They sing. They're apparently very chirpy, excuse the pun. And, they're lovely. The female birds, as usual, are not as bright as the males. Why is that? And they make a lot of people happy.
The judges said, here's why. This is why the superb fairy wren took our 2021 Australian Bird of the Year, because they're tiny little balls of pure joy.
Yes.
Oh, you lot need to come out of lockdown.
My heart is singing, and I'm like, yeah. So, look, I'm very happy for those supporters of the superb fairy wren.
No, me too. And condolences, of course. I mean, it's a day of celebration, Katie. Of course it is. There's no denying that. But condolences must go out to the Laughing Kookaburra and the Willy Wagtail, who put in an extraordinary performance. They came, they bought it. They didn't quite cut the mustard this year. It must be a tough day for them today.
It is indeed. Yeah. It is indeed. And I'll be commiserating with some of them. But, we take it on the chin, Sarah Jane.
Yeah. And there's always next year. We look forward to next year, always.
Absolutely.
From one superb Australian bird to another, you've got 30 seconds to tell me about Ms. Kylie Minogue.
Well, great excitement. Because Kylie Minogue, after more than 30 years, has announced she's moving back to Australia.
Hmm.
She's told those in the UK that she won't be gone forever. But she's coming back home, and I'm not too sure about all the details as to what's precipitated it. She will be doing some touring, and she's going to be relocating to Australia. I mean, why she would have left in the first place, I don't know, Sarah Jane, but maybe we'll be able to find out.
She's done very well since she used to be. She's one of your best exports. When I saw that news, I thought, is it news on the basis that one would assume that if you're Kylie Minogue and you've got a few quid or a few dollar or a few whatever it is, she's probably got a little bit stashed away. She's probably already got one, if not two, homes in Australia. So I'm not quite sure. Like, when you are a global citizen, as Ms. Minogue is, I'm not quite sure does that mean this is now your permanent home? You're going to spend 6 months and one day there, and then the rest of the time in your other eight homes? I don't know. I'll have to ask her. Anyway, or you might ask her. You might have an in.
I might try. I will try. But, I know I struggle kind of working out which country to live in between all of my major homes and all cities. So,
And any given week, I can be broadcasting from any one of my eight homes. Katie McDonald, thank you very much indeed. We'll chat to you again next week.